your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Rick Bensignor. We covered a lot of different markets and really summarized a lot of what happened this year and looking into next year. In the next two segments, I am focusing a bit more on the resource sector, let's call it. I am chatting right now with Steve Todoruk. He is an investment executive over at Sprott Global. Steve's been on the show a number of times now over the past few months, and he does always offer to take a look and rank any of the stocks that you, our listeners, hold in your portfolio. All you need to do is email Steve or email myself. I will post Steve's email address within the weekend show posting. Now, again, due to compliance issues, Steve and I cannot talk about specific stocks, but we can talk big picture. And Steve, you are focused on discovery plays. You are constantly out there looking for new discoveries and companies that are expanding on discoveries. This ties into the optionality plays. Now, obviously, optionality plays come back on the radar as the metals prices move higher. And in all fairness, they can provide some nice torque to the underlying metals price. But give me your thoughts on what you think of optionality plays as an investment.
I think optionality plays are appealing to, call them layman investors that don't want to have to roll up their sleeves to do the deep, hard digging and homework to find out what good companies are. It's tried and proven. We've seen companies over the decades that, you know, called optionality plays, and with a rising gold or silver price, you know, those share prices go up. They've got, you know, one to a number of deposits that are all sub-economic. You know, even at $1,800 gold, I doubt that one of the optionality plays has a deposit that would work at today's gold price. They need significantly higher, you know, metal prices. And I just don't care to play that game. It's at the end of the day, you've got to do something. You've got to sell your stock if you're going to make money, type of thing. And what's your catalyst for deciding when to sell it? In my niche in the discovery plays, you know, my exit strategy is waving goodbye to a big company taking us over. So there's an end goal that I got a gut feeling for that's going to be there. And with an optionality play, that isn't there. You know, most of these optionality play deposits are so uneconomic. They're usually in really remote areas or extremely rugged, mountainous, glaciers, out in the middle of nowhere where you need to start by building a $1 billion natural gas line to get out to it. I sort of say that when I was a geologist working in the field, when I got up in the morning to head out in the bush, the boss, you know, never said, you know, why don't you go try finding a sub-economic deposit for the company today? You know, that's not how it happens. They want economic deposits to mine for 10 to 50 years type of thing. So just maybe I'm tainted being a geologist, but it's I just shake my head. There's much better companies that you can sleep better at night. And again, you want to have some kind of an exit strategy as to when you're going to sell. And I've got my exit strategy steadfast, whereas optionality plays, I don't know, I guess you just got to get up out of bed one day and say, today's the day to sell.
Yeah, unfortunately, these optionality plays, they can be some of the most heavily promoted as well. But they are fairly easy to distinguish, right? You look at some of their economic studies and they show that, well, now they might be showing that they might make a little bit of money at current prices. But what is a lower threshold that you like to look at when you look at economic studies or some sort of, I guess, valuation metrics to isolate whether it is truly an optionality play or if it does make money at a lower level, kind of a threshold for you?
Well, I'd like to see it in today's world, a company, if it was mining, you know, the deposits I'm involved in juniors, that they could still make a profit at $1,000 or $1,200 gold price. You know, the lower you can go to see, you know, to see if you can still make a profit, that's how you define quality, you know, a world-class mine type of thing. So if you crunch numbers today and you need $1,500 gold price, I'm not too keen on that. That's why most of the big mining companies are calculating the reserves at much lower prices than what we've got today. They're saying, hey, this is wonderful. You know, yeah, we've got a year under our belt, you know, selling gold between $1,500, $1,800. that's wonderful, but we don't know if that's going to, they almost bank it's not going to happen. The high gold prices are going to stay here. They're always looking and assuming, you know, we know there's another correction coming in the commodity cycle. We just don't know when. So let's be prepared for it.
Yeah, it's important to protect your downside risk. And it's nice to see that the majors are doing that too, because they did get burned at the tail end of the last bull market. Does that mean then broadly that every time you hear a company say that they are a mineral bank, that usually means that they are an optionality play and you stay away?
Yes, absolutely.
Let's also talk about some M&A in the sector, because M&A has started to pick up, especially at the tail end of this year. We're not necessarily seeing majors buy these smaller companies, but we are seeing some of the mid-tiers and some of the generally smaller scale producers start to accumulate or bring in new projects. How do you see this carrying into next year?
I think it'll continue, not at a rapid pace, because you know, there's got to be a fit. Like there's a quite high profile merger this week between a bigger, you know, call it bigger mid-tier gold miner and a, you know, call it a top junior that not only explores, but they got a couple of mines. And one, the key part to the whole fit was they've got a 9 million ounce gold deposit in Canada. And the bigger companies got mines in Brazil and whatnot, i.e. in the higher risk countries. So and that company will trade at a discount. I mean, whoever you are, whether you're in Burkina Faso or Mali or Brazil, those are deemed to be higher risk in the marketplace. So the market's going to assign a higher discount rate type of thing. So by this bigger company acquiring a new good-sized project in Canada, low risk, overall they'll lower their country risk profile, and that should result in a re-rating, pushing their share price higher. So there's reasons like that why you see M&A. And then, you know, I don't necessarily go looking for that. But, you know, again, discovery play, my exit strategy is always if we can grow this into a good quality, valuable deposit, we should be taken over by a big company. And that's our exit strategy. We sell it all on the announcement of the takeover. So that's the M&A I'm looking for. And like I say, there's always going to be some, but I'm not expecting 10 or 20. Mergers and acquisitions this year. Maybe we get 3 to 5 or 6.
Yeah, it really takes time for M&A to build up steam. And in all fairness, when M&A is screaming and there's M&A deals, it seems like every week or almost every day, that sometimes indicates the top of a market too. So something to consider there. You mentioned the potential re-rate potential. On the back of at least some of these recent M&As, the market hasn't exactly taken them all that kindly. They haven't totally sold off these shares, but the market, I don't know, seems a bit slow to react to some of these M&A transactions. What's your takeaway from that?
Well, I guess it depends on how high profile the two companies are involved in the merger. You know, how loved are they, or are they just so-so? You know, are they equals, or is one a lot bigger than the smaller one type of thing? You almost always see the bigger company, when they announce that they're issuing shares of dilution, their stock is going down at least temporarily, whereas the other juniors usually goes up. In this high profile merger today, there really wasn't much of a premium offered. There will be a bit of a premium via a spin-out company, but my understanding is that the little company had a fair number of short positions against it, so right out of the left field, when this merger is announced, the stock went up, and the guys holding the shorts had to cover, and that pushed the stock up very nicely. So something a little different there.
Now, just final comment when it comes to M&A, you still focused a bit more in safer jurisdictions. Do you see those still being the leaders in terms of investor interest and also M&A interest?
I try to, like I've been talking lately, you know, it's magical, you know, what's up with Western Australia, perfect country for mining, you know, low risk, and we've got 4 very good looking discoveries, at least 4. You know, for me to get involved in a discovery in Brazil or the Congo, you know, or some other Bolivia, some other high risk countries, Russia, it would have to be absolutely spectacular, you know, world class potential. And I don't think I need to worry about that anytime soon, because they rarely happen. But if I see an opportunity like that, I'd take a look at it.
All right, Steve, we will wrap it up here. It's great having you on the show. I really appreciate all the time that you have spent with us in the last, let's say, quarter of this year. And I'm definitely going to be bringing you on, featuring you throughout next year. Again, if anybody wants some thoughts on positions that they hold in their portfolio, you can email Steve directly or myself, and I will pass on the stocks that you're wondering about, and Steve will get back to you. He's been getting back to everybody and providing a lot of helpful insights. So, Steve, really appreciate you offering that to our listeners, and I hope you have a great rest of your weekend and a very happy holiday season.
Just to talk, we've touched on it a bit in the past, Corey. If any of your listeners has a subject they'd like us to talk on, keeping in mind that for compliance reasons, I'm not allowed to mention specific company names, but if you can ask a generalized topic, you know, we can see what we do for you.
Absolutely. Keep that in mind as well. Hey, Steve, great chatting with you. Thanks for your time.
Have a good Christmas, Corey.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.